Hi there, we're the Two Fat Expats, and while we're ample in both personality and gusto, that's not quite what the Fat Expats are about. Fat Expats make the most out of expat life, filling it up to the brim and packing it all in while they can. I'm Kirsty Rice, an Aussie based in Qatar in the Middle East, and in a moment you're going to meet Nikki Moffat, who's also an Aussie, but she's over in Hamburg, Germany. Between us, we've been in over 10 locations as expats in the past 15 years or so, and we've learnt in that time that expat life is much more fun the fatter you live it. Okay, let's get on with it, shall we? Let's dig in. Hello, Nikki Moffat. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you, Kirsty Rice. How are you?
Oh, you are still croaky, though.
I am a little bit still croaky. The cold that just keeps on giving.
When do you get your husband and child back?
I get my child back tomorrow afternoon, and my husband came back last night when we were all asleep. So that was good. But it was, I tell you, I have never had that before. So we had 2 days of just my son and I, and it was so peaceful and so lovely in the house. And we did sneaky, cheeky things that we wouldn't normally do during the week. Like one night I said, what do you want for dinner? And he said, McDonald's. And I said, okay. So we went on the train quickly together and got McDonald's and came home. And I know my daughter will never listen to this podcast. That's why I can say it. Nothing was a drama. It was really, really very lovely.
So that would have to be a major difference from your US life to your Hamburg life, is we got on the train to get McDonald's. Because I'm guessing in the US you got in your massive big truck and drove through the drive-through, did you not?
Well, we never had McDonald's in America because McDonald's in America is just not good. But yes, we would always have to get in the car to drive somewhere. So it was just nice. It was just part of us doing something together. Also, it was, you know, we live 200 meters from the train station, so it's not far. It's two stops on the train. It's no biggie, but yeah, it's a totally different life. Oh, a different way of approaching things.
And how do you order a hamburger in German? What do you say?
Well, this is the rule that we have in our house. If you want to eat out, you have to be able to order it in German. So I have my children order for me now because I said I ordered it for them for the first 6 months. So it's pretty straightforward. I did the other night, we were at a restaurant and my son wanted a cheeseburger and I was trying to explain to the lady he didn't want anything on it. And she said, what do you want to get in German? And I said, oh, a Käseburger. And she's like, a what? Oh, a cheeseburger. I was like, yeah, that's it.
Okay, so kicking off the podcast again, we thought we would start with what's hot in the group. And when I say what's hot in the group, I'm talking about our Two Fat Expats Facebook group, which Nikki is on fire at the moment with so many fun conversations. One of them, though, that I really enjoyed that gave me lots of ideas was, now I don't know how to say her name, and I'm sure this isn't her real name, MSMG.
Yeah, I think it's meant to be Ms. something. I don't know. I think she's done a very clever thing, though, in cloaking her social media.
Yes, she has. But she posted, if anyone had any suggestions on celebrating holidays or marking milestones without using tons of stuff. And she said she was packing for their first expat adventure and realized they had oodles of trinkets and decorations that they'd collected over the years. But she was sort of wondering of ways that they could do it without moving so much stuff around. And they had a 6 and an 8-year-old. And I loved, Laura said they get a Christmas decoration everywhere they've been and a magnet everywhere they've been. But the one I really loved was she said they buy postcards from places where they day trip and then write about the trip on the back of them and then put them in a scrapbook. I have never thought of doing that.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. Actually, since we've been in Germany and done trips around here, wherever we go somewhere, I get the kids, I buy postcards and they send one to a friend and one to their grandparents. So I should just buy an extra one and make them write a diary entry.
Yeah, because if you actually wrote about the trip, it'd be fantastic, wouldn't it? To remember what you did and what happened. Now, the other one, which again, I thought, why didn't I think of something like this, was Lauren, who said, favorite thing is using non-traditional things as ornaments.
And they had used a key to each house where they'd lived and sort of labelled it with the address and tied a ribbon on it, and then it becomes a Christmas ornament. Nikki, do you even have the keys of the places you used
to live? No, I don't, and I'm gutted because I did see a similar thing to this. A friend of mine put up a photo where she had moved to her forever house, as she called it, and had on the wall had a key from each of the houses that she's been, that she's lived in, and the address. I was like, oh, that would be so wonderful to have.
I know.
And then I thought, oh, maybe I could just like fudge it and pretend. And then I thought, no, that's totally against the spirit of the whole thing. I love the ornament thing because you don't have to worry about like having it all set and framed. You can just throw it on the tree every year and then throw it back in the ornament jar. But I could I say, I don't know whether you felt the same way, but before I lived in North America, I had one box slash bag of Christmas decorations. And when I left North America, I had several enormous plastic buckets.
Yeah, absolutely. North America Christmas decorations are to behold, aren't they? And I remember it playing on my mind so much that I had anxiety about not doing it properly. Do you know, we bought a house that was in a little cul-de-sac that the family who were leaving had literally moved in with very young children, and their children had grown up through the years and turned into adults and got married and left, and you know, now they were retiring to go and live in the mountains. And they were a really beautiful family, and I remember the husband was an ex-policeman, and he was that sort of straight up and down, not giving much away kind of guy, you know, not hugely emotional. And I remember just we went to sort of do a last minute sort of handover where he was the last one left packing up the house, and you could tell that it was really, you know, getting to him. And I was saying to him, you know, I've just got no idea what to do for Christmas decorations. Like, it really was worrying me. I said, you know, we've never even put up lights, and we don't have any of that stuff. And, you know, I've seen what other people do, and I've got no idea. I said, you know, what did you do here, and how did you do it, and what did you do? And I think he just thought I was absolutely crackers. And anyway, when we came to move in, the house was, you know, as it should be, completely empty, completely spotless, clean, beautiful. And I walked out to the garage, and there were his Christmas decorations.
Oh, he left them.
He left them. It was just the most touching, beautiful thing, do you know, from a stranger. So
he probably left half of them, or maybe a third. And you thought that was all of them.
Oh dear. So another one, or did you have any others, Nikki, on there for
no, they were my two favorites as well. But I just thought it was really nice that there were loads and loads of ideas for people jumping in and giving their ideas and what they do. And that's one of the best things about the group is
we love that group.
Everyone shares.
Two Fat Expats on Facebook. There was another one from Mandy. Mandy had written, is there anyone in Australia who's planning on relocating there and looking for something to do with their time? And I just thought this was a really good reminder for people that are looking for volunteer opportunities. You know, so often in the expat world, while one person's waiting to find the job or waiting for something to come through and getting stressed or anxious about, you know, not having work, you kind of forget that there's so many other things you could be doing. But Mandy mentioned this organisation called Raise Mentoring, and I actually went onto their website and had a look at them, and they're a really gorgeous organisation that do support for teens in crisis, and they do in-school mentoring, and they provide sort of fully qualified training and support. So one of the things I particularly liked about it was they're not affiliated with any religious or political organisation, and sometimes that's hard to find.
That's true, especially a support organisation like that. So that's excellent.
Yes. Now, Donna.
We need to talk about Donna.
So as we said in last week's episode, when I posted about being powerless and pissed off, I was talking about people who've moved from place to place to place, and if their career has been sacrificed because of it, or if they, every time they start something, they then all of a sudden have to pack it up and leave, and how there are many expat spouses who can feel powerless and pissed off. And there were a lot of people chiming in on the conversation, and then up popped Donna. And Donna just blew everyone out of the water, because Donna said, I don't feel powerless and pissed off because every time my husband gets paid, half of it goes into my account. Like, it gets split and it just goes straight into my account. Now, when I first read that, I immediately wanted to talk to her, obviously, and I did talk to her, but I went to go and see
so if... many questions.
Oh, so many questions. And I went to go and see a friend, and I said to her, this woman's just written on the Facebook page and she gets half of the salary put straight into her account. And the woman I was talking to said, that's inspirational. That's And what I want to know, well, I tell you what, why don't we listen to Donna first? Because I did give her a call and we had a quick sort of, you know, 5-minute chat. So why don't we listen to that first, and then Nikki, you and I can come back and have a chat.
For the most part, the money goes into his own bank account at first, but I have access to it. And so once we like pay a bill out of his account, like we have a storage container at back home, that'll get taken out of his bank account. And I think we have Netflix, and that'll get taken out of his bank account. And then whatever I have in my savings account, he puts in his savings account. So my savings account might have 10,000 and his savings account has 10,000. And then he might have a little bit different in his checking account than I have. I usually have more because I'll pay for things like trips that we take and things like that. But for the most part, yeah, we already have it split down the middle in case of some type of emergency. You know, we live in Thailand. It actually kind of evolved because when we started dating, we always kept everything separate. And when we got married, we kept our bank account separate. It wasn't until we were married maybe 12 or 14 years that we decided that we would have a joint account, because he had dated a girl who had stolen from him. And so he was really kind of gun shy about sharing a bank account. And then I had always been pretty independent. And so when we came here and I decided that I would quit my job, I was like, you know what? It's not really fair if you have all the money and I don't. It needs to be fair, because if something happens and you run off with somebody, I want to have my own money. I want to be able to take care of myself. I want to be able to buy a house, a car. I want to be able to not, you know, need you anymore, because, you know, it happens a lot here in Thailand that the men like run off with another woman. So.
Is this your first expat assignment? Was Thailand your first one?
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so is this then your first time of not working?
Right. Yes. Ooh. We've been here 2 years.
Wow. Why do you think it is that not everybody comes to that arrangement?
I think a lot of people just don't have that very frank conversation. I mean, I'm just a really honest, open, frank conversation type of person. And I've always, my husband and I talk about everything. I mean, everything. And so, you know, I had seen my mom go through a divorce. And when you watch your parents go through a divorce, and when you see a woman who struggles financially, you realize that that's not who you want to be. And so even though I had my own job and my own money and my own 401k, I knew that if I was going to become totally dependent on another person, I still wanted to have my own identity and my own, you know, money and stuff like that. So, you know, he and I talked about it all along. I mean, everything really. I don't know why other people don't get to this. I know there are a lot of men and women who are like, oh, I don't discuss this with my wife or with my husband, or I don't let my husband know what I'm spending. But I'm pretty transparent. I'm pretty honest with him about everything that I spend. But the thing about it is that I can see what my husband's doing in his account. He can see what I'm doing in my account. So it's not like he could go out and buy a car and me not know about it. You want to have the transparency with your partner, because you don't want to give so much freedom to somebody that they can go out and really ruin you financially. But at the same time, you want to have things that are separate.
Then if you were to go to a different location where you did work, would the rules be you'd just split half your salary again? Or do you think you'd go, oh, I guess, or would you just bank your salary and go back to,
we would just bank it or use it for travel. That's what we do. We have a budget, our budget, you know, I have a budget. And so we have money that we're going to spend on travel for the year. And we have, you know, I keep up with all our receipts and I know where we're spending our money as far as like groceries and, you know, haircuts and clothes and movies and all that stuff, because I'm a numbers person. So I have a spreadsheet full of everything. I know where all our money goes.
I have lots of thoughts about this, because I think one of the things that's really interesting with Donna was the Asian influence. I often talk about being MIA, which is missing in Asia. And anyone who's lived in Asia, and I mean, top that to stage 100 if you've lived in Bangkok too, I imagine, which is where Donna is. But you can become very disillusioned in mankind, because, and when I say mankind, I mean men. In the fact that, you know, you go out to dinner, you'll go to a pub, you'll go wherever, and you will just see a hell of a lot of 50, 60-year-old Western men with very young, you know, Asian Asian women who are nursing a can of Coke or a glass of Coke and fawning all over these guys. And you just know there's a background story. I thought it was really interesting with Donna how she said, you know, that she decided all of that before she went to Thailand. She sort of said to her husband, you know, if I'm giving up my job and I'm giving up all of this, I need to feel comfortable financially.
Yeah. And I think that that's, and obviously they had that conversation and they were both happy with the outcome, and it's both working for them. And as she said, she's very open and very honest, and that's the kind of relationship they have. But she also mentioned that other people don't have that same relationship with their partner, and that's fine. And I guess, you know, what's good for one person is not necessarily good for everyone, but it certainly works for Donna and her husband.
Yeah, but I actually think they are a brilliant and shining example of how all couples should speak about their money.
Yes. I mean, there's a conversation. You don't have to do what they have done, but you certainly, financial conversations are very hard in all sorts of relationships. And, you know, and one where you're living overseas, where one of you has a greater income than the other, significantly greater usually, it's even more important, I guess. And just to say that and to voice the fact that she felt she was going to be, you know, not powerless, but in order to maintain her level of power or how she felt about herself in the relationship, that's what she needed. And her husband said, okay. So to me, that's an indication of a pretty good relationship.
Yeah. And, you know, I brought this up at the dinner table last night and I told my husband, and he had the look of a Labrador who's confused, you know, when you suggest a walk and it's not walk time, or you suggest... You know, you suggest something and they're looking at you kind of quizzically, tilting their head, not sure about that treat that you're about to offer. And he just looked so perplexed. And I wondered, is it, you know, do these conversations not happen because one half of the partnership doesn't realize how the other person is feeling about money? But I also just question, why don't we all do this? Why doesn't everybody just do this? Why doesn't this happen automatically? Like if two working if a couple who are both working move and the other person continues to work, why doesn't it just automatically happen that you then just split it down the middle and get half? Why don't we?
I don't know. Well, because different things work for different people. And I mean, some people's one partner's in, you know, in charge, I pay all the bills, I move all the money around, I do all that. And frankly, my husband's pretty comfortable with that. You know, he doesn't really have the passwords to do it anyway. Donna's husband does. And that's not that I'm hiding them from him. It's just anytime he asks, you know, what's this, what's that, I'll send him the details and he can go and look himself. But it's just, you know, sometimes one person in the couple does that. There's another situation which is interesting. So when I have friends who, when they work, and relatives, when they work, their money is their money, and the primary earner's money is the money that pays for everything in the household.
Yeah.
So that happens. And so their money, their salary goes into their own account. And I said, we were having this conversation at dinner party, and afterwards I said to Sam, why didn't that ever happen with me? Why did we just have a joint account all the time? I think next time I work, I'd like to have my own account. He said, oh, this is terrible. This is giving you bad ideas. But we've just always done it where we've had a joint account. You know, before we got married, we had a joint credit card, so we would pay for everything, you know, all our rent and all our groceries, we would just put on this credit card, and then we would split the cost of the credit card. We would pay half each at the end of the month. But then as soon as we were married, we just had a joint account, and we've always had a joint account ever since. So when I have been working, the money's gone into that joint account and we've budgeted accordingly. And when I haven't been working, the money's still gone into the same account. So I guess I've never felt a loss of, I feel other ways, but I've never felt a loss of access to money.
Yes. And maybe too, we need to factor in, like you always say, Nikki, you've always lived in countries that have been quite comfortable to live in. Do you know, you've never had that problem. And so you've always had your human rights as well. And, you know, I was thinking about it for women because, you know, I know there's a lot of women that live in certain countries that really fear for what would happen if something happened to their husband. Do you know, and I know Sarah and I did an episode in season one where I basically said if I found out that something terrible happened to my husband, the first thing I would do would be to go to the bank because our accounts would all be frozen. So the first thing, maybe even before going to the hospital, I would go to the bank and get all the cash because I've seen it and I know someone who took years to get her own money because her husband had a heart attack and died and everything was frozen. And we're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars because it was their joint money. And they were, you know, close to 60 and they had money. You know, Greg and I have no money, so.
But maybe that's the other thing. When Donna was talking about splitting the salary, I'm like, yeah, but you split the salary and then it all goes to all the places and then is there really a lot left?
Yes.
I was very impressed with her savings scheme.
Yes, they don't have a mortgage, I don't believe. So there you go. Anyway, I just thought we'll go on and talk about expat finances as we go along. But this was another thing that I love about that group is occasionally someone puts something in there that makes everybody else go, I've been an expat for 17 years and that's never crossed my mind. What?
And that's exactly right. And that's why being online is not all bad.
Okay, so hot topic of the week, Nikki, was international schools. Now, in my memories, up popped, and I can't even remember when it was. Maybe, it says here, it was 2013. God. So in 2013, I sat down one morning at my computer and wrote this post called Louise, Sassy and Ushka, the women at the international school gate. And I obviously didn't think much of it, put it out to the world and it went bananas. And that's that, of course, I always talk about this blog of mine, but I don't say it's called Four Kids, 20 Suitcases and a Beagle. And you can find it at Kirsty Rice online. But so off it went and I shared it again because it came up in my memories and there were some comments that were a bit giggle worthy. But I love, Nikki, you were saying that someone called Ushka in the blog comments.
Yeah, so I think I reread it. I read it at the time, obviously, and I think I even shared it at the time because I thought it was funny. And that's when I was just a fangirl of yours. I didn't know you in real life. Anyway, now you're my friend. See how that happens? Freaky. Anyway, so I went onto the blog this week to have another look at it, and someone had written, oh, my name is Ushka, and that's not really a very common Dutch name. Which I thought was very funny because it was kind of ironic, if that's the right use of the term.
Yeah. So in the post, which we'll link to on twofatexpats.com if you head over to the website, but in the post I talked about the different sorts of women you meet at different sorts of international school, and I did British, American, Canadian and in the Netherlands. We had one comment here where it says, she says, I have to say, as an expat in the US, I have met Sassy several times over, even though I do my best to run when I see her coming at me with that gleam in her eyes, the horror of the perkiness. And yes, it's all sunshine and awesome and well done, buddy. And I'm always wanting to drop the F-bomb when I'm around her. Does this make me a bad person? But I have to tell you, Nikki, the awesome, everything's awesome. Well done, buddy. Did you pick up on that in your time in America?
You got this. I just remember when I first went to America, I hated that phrase with a passion. I just couldn't understand why anyone would say it and what it even meant. And then I heard it so many times. And I don't know, Kirsty, if I ever told you that I ran a marathon one day. And when I was running the New York Marathon at the end of 2013, I mean, people said it to me 1,000 times. Nikki, Nikki, because you wear your name on your shirt. You got this. You got this. I'm like, yeah, damn right. I got this. Yeah. And I think it was when I was running that marathon that I took ownership of you got this. So, and then I say it all the time. And I think it's wrong. In my head, I still think it's wrong. But now I'm a convert.
Yeah, me too. The one that got me was awesome. Everything was awesome. That's awesome. And everyone was always so excited. I'm so excited. And I think, but you're not excited. You're not really excited. You can't be that excited. A male expat spouse, a friend of mine, was saying he lives on a compound. He's British and loves to revel in the misery of being British. And he said he's got two neighbours, and one's a Brit and one's American. And he said, without fail, you can walk outside and you'll see the Brit and you'll say, "Hi, Sarah, how's it going?" And she'll say, "Oh, you know, Jim got really drunk last night, and you know, I had to get him out of bed this morning, and the kids were late, and the milk was off, and oh, this week is sucks already, and it's only Monday." And he said, and then he would see his American neighbor, "Hi, Heather, how are you?" "I'm awesome. I'm awesome. Everything's awesome." But the thing I did love about this comment that I thought was so, so true is she said, "All I can say is stay strong, grit your teeth and smile, because at the end of the day, no matter how super cutesy annoying those mums might occasionally be, they're the ones that you'll be texting at 11 p.m. to ask about the homework due tomorrow." And that is the revelation you have when you're in America. And that's when you suddenly realize, I've got to stop bagging these Americans, because, God, they're good at community. And, gee, they're good at organization. Like I've always said, people give the Germans great credit for organization, but if the Americans did it, not only would it be organized, but there'd be a marching band with razzle-dazzle. Yeah,
it's happy. It's happy organization. And that's the thing. So that's the thing that now I'm in the international school scene again, because I wasn't in the States. I was in the local school scene. Everyone at school talks about the American school. So last weekend, the American School of The Hague came to Hamburg, to the International School of Hamburg, for a sports sort of tournament. They sent their volleyball and soccer teams. Mm-hmm. And everyone was talking about last year when we went to the American School of The Hague, and how amazing it was, and how the welcome committee and the booster club, and just how well they do everything. I said, because they're American. That's how they do. But they just do it so well. Like they're just, but I just love that when I turned up in the States and I turned up at my sort of meet and greet for the school, the PTA ladies were wearing shirts with sequins. The PTA was in sequins on their t-shirts, and I'm like, that is so cool. Now I'm in America.
I know. And they will. They'll dress up and they'll have matching outfits, and you just can't beat them for energy. I always get the giggles here because we have one son does baseball, which is predominantly, you know, North American, and we have another son who does rugby, and which is full of South Africans and Kiwis and Aussies and Brits. And you know, when we go to baseball, we feel so wholesome and good because you got this, and you know, everyone's awesome and nobody's terrible at anything, and you know, everybody's fantastic, we're all having a great time, we're eating hot dogs and junk food and so much pop you wouldn't even dream about it. And then you go across the road to rugby and some Irishman says, "Gee, your son's got better this year. Last year he couldn't even tackle a fish dinner," and and they're drinking beer and having illegal bacon sandwiches.
And that's the rugby crowd. Yes, Maya said, "My kids just started at an international school in the Netherlands, and I haven't had much contact with the parents, but I'm definitely struggling with their friends' names," which was what was in your blog post.
Yes, because I think the phrase I used was trying to say their name, you'll feel like you've got something stuck in your throat while trying to yodel or something.
"I can't seem to be able to pronounce the names or even to remember them, despite my kids repeating them over and over again. I love all that diversity. One thing, though, the parking lot is full of bikes, more than I have ever seen,
yes.
Which is true. So I guess you don't have it in Doha, but our Hamburg school parking lot also lots and lots of bikes.
Yes, yeah, no, we definitely don't have bikes because you'd be killed within 3 minutes of hitting the highway. But you definitely wouldn't put your child on there with you. But, yeah, I'm always amazed, you know, at these European women that not only are they riding the bike, but they're also wearing children, not sharing things, like they're wearing their children in all sorts of apparatus all over their bodies, one on the back, one on the front. And then you'll find out that they're a judge in the high court or, you know, they have these jobs. It's incredible.
It's a very leveling experience, the bike riding, I think. I find that, yeah, very egalitarian. Yeah, so also though, Kirstie, now I've been in Northern Europe, I think it needs an update for the Scandinavians. Because if you thought the Dutch were tall, you should see some Scandinavians. And also we need to add in about it being in Germany and how many pairs of shoes you need. I mean, how many pairs of shoes can you have?
Yes.
Do you have that at your school? Do you need 6 pairs of shoes to go to school?
Canada, you need 6 pairs to go to school. You've got to have your snow boots and you've got to have your inside shoes. Yes, absolutely. But no, here in Qatar, most kids are in sneakers. Do you know? Because, of course, at the American school, there's no uniform.
Yeah, perfect. But here you've got to have indoor shoes, indoor gym shoes, outdoor gym shoes, outdoor shoes, and Wellington boots.
Oh my God, imagine me with 4 kids. That would be
Yeah, I can't.
So
my friend has 4
expensive.
Kids. I'm like, how do you even know? How do you even have that many pairs of shoes in your house? And they're all the ones that have to be at school. Like, they're not even the ones you can wear on weekends.
Okay, so I want to hear from everyone else. I want to hear about the international school that you go to and what are some of the surprises that you found or things you learned or what's the stereotypical school parent at your school. To do that, you go to twofatexpats.com and you look for that lovely little microphone that's on the right-hand side of the screen and you just click on the microphone and leave a message and tell us, and we would love to hear it.
Yes, and we're tongue-in-cheek and we're very friendly, so we're not trying to upset anyone. We're just trying to, you know, tease it all out.
Yes, look, I love our school, and I know that is the scary thing when you write things, when people think that you're actually trying to say something underhanded or, you know, put some message out there. No, I love our school, and I've loved all the bits. I mean, I wrote about the Canadians and, you know, our Tim Hortons and how nice everybody was or whatever, and then with the Australians, how drunk. I mean, it was, you could have called it slightly stereotypical, couldn't you, Nikki?
just a little bit. Anyway, moving on.
So podcasts, screens and books, what are you listening to? Which podcast are you doing at the moment, Nikki?
Got a couple of podcasts. One is one I've just finished and it was a 6-part podcast called Hanging, and very cheery topic. It was about a 10-year-old boy who committed suicide in 1989. So his name was Joshua Claver and he was found hanging in his father's barn the night before he was meant to speak to a judge privately about who he wanted to live with in a custody dispute situation. And the death was ruled a suicide. However, the father, who was a county police officer, has a documented history of abuse, and Joshua's mother insisted there was more to the story. So years and years later, this reporter looked into, can a 10-year-old commit suicide? Like, how many 10-year-olds do that? And how it came about. So it was quite interesting. So it remains a solved case because they recently reopened it and had a look into it. But it was just fascinating in terms of, I mean, it's a very distressing topic, but it doesn't focus on that so much as it focuses on all the reasons behind it and what could have been done differently and what was missed. Because he went home with his father that night and his father's wife, and he was meant to speak to the judge the next day. But what the judge that sent him home with his father didn't realize was that there had been some instances earlier where he'd been banned from staying with his father because of some incidents. So it was just a very tricky situation. It was about, you know, did the police cover it up? What happened? And so I just, it was quite well done in terms of the investigation. She really And ethically, it was a very interesting podcast because she interviewed a lot of people. Some of them didn't want to be recorded. And she said things like, "So I recorded them anyway, but I'm not playing it on the podcast because it was their wish not to be recorded." But because that state has a rule that you can record with only one party knowing, she was able to actually go on doing the recording. Ooh, and so it wasn't illegal for her to record. But it was for her notes. So she said it was for her notes. So she didn't, she never played the recordings. So we didn't hear that. So just in terms of these kind of real crime podcasts, which I know you don't always love, but it was just very interesting in the way that it was reported and the way the ethics around it, because a lot of people record people and don't tell them, you know, and she would ask every person, "Can I record it? You know, would you like, would you mind, et cetera, et cetera." And, you know, there were some people that didn't want to speak to her because she was bringing up things from the past. One policeman chased her out of town. You know, there, there were all sorts of very interesting situations. So I just thought it was really, it was very interesting. And it, you know, it, it investigated a very sad situation.
And who produced it, Nikki?
I don't have it right in front of me, but I think it's produced by Minnesota Public Radio, I want to say. So it's done by, like, it's in, it's like an NPR style podcast. And the other one that I'm listening to, which is a little bit more exciting and upbeat, Weak in the Knees by Morgan Spurlock. Now, do you remember Morgan Spurlock from Super Size Me?
Yes.
That was probably his most famous one. So he does a Week at the Knees where he looks at the week in review. He sits down with a panel of people, which is different every week, and it does day by day the previous week's news stories, and they try and bring up some of the ones that are neglected. But they, he has a timer. So after they start talking about news articles, and then I'll just say Tuesday over the top of them. So they have to stop what they're talking about and then go into Tuesday's news. So it's just a little bit of a different way of a week in review, and I'm quite enjoying it. That's called Weak in the Knees.
Oh yeah, I definitely wanna. I'm not sure I can do the 10-year-old. Hanging on, because I'm not good with that stuff. I don't know. I just since I've had children, I really struggle to listen to, or you know, do anything where children are involved. I really, really struggle with it.
What about you?
Yes, so for me, I was going to talk about Hidden Brain, and I was all set to talk about Hidden Brain, and I had 15 minutes left of the Hidden Brain podcast to listen to, and I was going to tell you about a particular topic. And then I got a message from my boss saying, "Can you please listen to this podcast and tell me what you think?" And I had to listen to his. So I'm going to tell you about his podcast, because he is going to be on No Filter this week with Mia Friedman. And so I got to have a little cheeky listen to what that sounds like.
Oh, an advanced listen.
Yes. So it will drop on Monday morning, I believe, Oz time, Monday morning. And she interviews him. And obviously, because I've worked with him for a while, there wasn't a lot that I didn't know. But it was kind of gorgeous to hear him talk about his wife and family. And he talks a bit about what sort of kicked off this book of his, which was The Fire, where he lost absolutely everything. Have I ever told you that story, Nikki, with him?
I think I have heard that, or I've read that story. Maybe I've read it.
He was a part of those disastrous fires in Victoria where bushfire came through, and basically they lost absolutely everything. And what was really sad was his wife had lost her father, and so all the photos of him and any way of accessing photos of him, you know, were just gone. The wedding dress was gone. All those little trinkets and bits was all gone. But it was really interesting. But one of the points he makes in the book he makes it in the podcast, and it just always stays with me as a mother of young women, because he always tells young women that a man is not a financial plan. And the reason I say like that is because that's what my daughters say to me, because they've heard it that many times now that they go, "Yeah, we know a man is not a financial plan." But The thing he was really trying to push, I think, to me, his audience, was that whole idea of some guy coming along and he looks like he earns a lot more money than you and, you know, he's in control of the finances, and just never to let that happen. And the phrase he says is, you know, when Romeo comes along in his leased BMW, don't think he's any smarter at money than you are. Do you know? And I just thought that was a very good point. But yes, yeah, so he'll be on No Filter on Monday morning. But
has he been on No Filter before?
No, never. Never been on No Filter.
I must have heard him. Has he been on Conversations with Richard Feidler? Has he? I'm sure I've heard him interviewed on a podcast before.
No, he does a lot of radio. So so he's on Triple M a couple mornings a week. He's on the ABC very often. He's often the money guy on the telly when they want to talk to someone about, you know, what's happening at the Reserve Bank or, you know, what you should do with your money or whatever. And I guess, you know, that's the thing. He's absolutely everywhere now. I went to see a girlfriend this morning who's moving to Perth, and she's never been remotely interested in what I do for a job. And then this morning, so I've never really talked about it, and then this morning she worked out who I worked for, and she said, oh, I got that book when I was back in Australia. It's like, yeah, okay. But speaking of books, I returned
what have
to
you got
a book. Yeah, I returned to a book this week because I wanted a hard copy book to take down to the pool. And so, you know, I did the old flick through the shelves and came back with The Geography of Bliss. And it's a book I've read ages ago, I want to say 4 years ago, and I realised I never gave it back to the person who gave it to me, and thank God they still live here in Qatar, so I'll be giving it back this week. Thank you very much, Lisa, but I promise I'll bring it back this week. And The Geography of Bliss, did you ever read it or listen to it, Nikki?
I haven't, no.
Yeah, so it's kind of a travel memoir with a twist, and it's often described as a grump's search for happiness. And it was a guy who was a foreign correspondent in Afghanistan and Iraq and Indonesia. So he'd been around a lot of trouble and a lot of unstable sort of areas. And he decided that he would go off and look for these happy places. And so he goes in search of the happiest countries and travels through the happiest countries. And so he actually comes to Qatar, which is really interesting because we're the richest country in the world. And he looks into that, you know, does money really make you happy? But he goes to Iceland. You know how people always say people in Iceland are happy? And he goes to Denmark, you know, all of these places. But there's one quote from the book that I wanted to see because I really love this book. And he said, money matters, but less than we think, and not in a way that we think. Family is important, so are friends. Envy is toxic, so is excessive thinking. Beaches are optional, trust is not. Neither is gratitude, and our happiness is completely and utterly intertwined with other people. Family and friends, neighbours, and the woman you hardly notice who cleans your office. Happiness is not a noun or a verb, it's a conjunction, connective tissue. And I could not agree more. I just loved that whole paragraph. I just love it. Yeah, yeah, it was really good.
Excessive thinking is toxic.
Because, you know, I watched a doco a few years ago at a film festival called The Happiness Project, and it showed you all these different people around the world, and they leveled their measure of happiness. And it turned out the happiest guy was the Indian guy with the rickshaw, and he was living in abject poverty. But he was so happy because he sustained his needs. He had just enough to feed his family, keep a roof over his head, and he was very happy. You know, the more things we want and need, the more we compare, the more we talk about it, the more we, you know, worry, and that whole thing about envy and the rest of it, you know, the unhappier we get. And it's a proven fact that you have to have great lows to then get those highs. Right, you have to go into those
dark
places to bounce back to understand the happiness. Yeah, I think it's a great book. So, if anyone's interested, we'll have a link. But it's called The Geography of Bliss. Nikki, what have you been watching?
Okay, well, I have been watching. So, in the summer, I did a bit of a TV marathon. I read an article, What Your Teens Are Watching.
Yes.
And it talked about 8 shows or whatever, and I thought, oh, this is interesting. I'm a bit, you know, I always think I'm younger than I am. So, and it was things that I'd watched before, like Gossip Girl, The 100, whatever.
Not as young as 13.
Come on, let me dream. Let me dream. Riverdale. Have you seen in Riverdale?
No, but my children have.
Oh, they have.
I think so.
Yeah, it's like the Archie comics come to life.
Yes, we've talked.
Except Jughead is now kind of like a sex symbol instead of like. I think I need to reread the comics because I didn't see him being sort of the moody, broody writer when I was reading the comics.
Yes. So if you had to look at all of these things that teens were watching, from 13 Reasons Why to Gossip Girls to Riverdale or whatever, what would you pick as what you'd like your children to watch in any of those?
Yeah, I'm not really sure. I mean, the 100 is like a dystopian future where everyone, there's a lot of violence.
Yes.
Pretty Little Liars, there's violence and death and lots of lying and keeping adults out of it.
Yes.
Riverdale's kind of the same. It's a comic come to life, so I don't really know how to do that. Gossip Girl's the same thing. It's a terrible, toxic environment. The Vampire Diaries full of vampires. I mean, I don't really know what 13 Reasons Why has suicide as a theme. I'm not really sure what I'm watching, wanting my teens to watch, but what I wanted to do was be aware of what teens were watching.
Yes.
So, you know, I could be the uncool mum who could comment if someone brought it up in the car.
Because that's what teenagers really like. They like to feel that you're listening to their conversations when they're in the car. We talked about 13 Reasons Why, didn't we, when it was all hot and about. But yes, my girls have both watched Gossip Girl and Pretty Little Liars. And when it came to the 100, I did not have a leg to stand on because everybody had read the books. And that's always been my argument. If you've read the books, well, then you can watch the film and or the series, and they'd all read them.
Kirsty, what are you watching?
I can't wait to tell you about what I'm watching. Once again, we're watching something completely inappropriate for the age of my children. So I went searching on Netflix the other night to find something that I could sit down with Mr. 13, nearly 14, and Mr. 11, right? And I went through everything that I could find, and everything was, you know, 16 plus, 16 plus, 16 plus, and it was like, no, I can't put my little guy in front of them. So then I found this show called Lovesick, and it said it was 13 plus, and I thought, well, 13's okay, because as my son told me only recently, we were watching Survivor and he turned to me and said, Mum, this might be an awkward question for you, but can you just tell me what those girls do when they have their period? And I went, that's not awkward, thinking, wow. And then I said to him, after we'd talked about it, I said to him, you know, I'm really impressed that you raised that with me. And I was surprised that you were there and you've obviously been talking about that at school. Oh, Mum, I've known about periods and erections for years. So on that knowledge, I thought, well, this can't be too bad because it's a British show. It revolves around a group of English friends living in Scotland. Kind of the main character, Dylan, discovers that he has chlamydia and he has to go back and see all of his sexual partners and tell them the news. And so he could have rung them all, but that wouldn't have made a great television series. So the whole show, you see his awful, awful friend Luke and his lovely, lovely friend Evie, and they all share a house, and you kind of go back and forth from past to present, from past to present, and you see that there's unrequited love with him and Evie, where at different times they've both kind of liked each other, but it hasn't really happened. But you see all these relationships with how he's ended up sleeping with these women and how it affects, you know, the whole group. And it's funny. It's really funny. It came out in about 2014, and it's really, there has been some laugh out loud giggles, but I don't think it's 13 plus. I think it's 16 plus. I think.
And what is it on? Netflix? Or
yes,
on?
It's on Netflix, and there are two seasons, and I believe there's a third one coming out, which I also can't work out how they do, because surely we're going to run out of women, but I don't know.
But what about, you know what we also have to look out for? What was that show that we both really enjoyed, which was a disaster? You know, the couple that met.
Catastrophe.
And then they got,
Catastrophe. Yes. I love that show. Yeah.
That must have a new season soon. We should look out for that too.
Yes. So, Nikki, there was one other thing that we were going to talk about. So while we've been doing the 16-8, and for those who haven't listened to the last couple of weeks, you and I are both doing the intermittent fasting. I have now lost over 3 kilos in 2 weeks, which is very exciting. Yay! And I am loving this intermittent fasting. I have to say, it does not feel like an imposition to me at all. And I feel so much better. Week two is so much easier than week one. And I did read somewhere that you do start to see results in about week three, like much bigger results. So I'm loving it. I'm absolutely loving it. And for people that we're not making any sense, basically it means we fast for 16 hours and we eat for 8. And so I've been eating from sort of 1 to 8. I've actually been doing 17 hours. And someone very cleverly told us that we need to go and follow Colleen Pugh, whose Instagram is Dear Colleen. And she draws the food that she's eaten that day. And they are the most beautiful illustrations of what she's eaten while she's doing her fast.
It's totally amazing. And did you see there was one Instagram post where she did a video of the drawing and how it comes together?
Yeah.
So it was like a little video. Yeah. Amazing.
Which is exactly what I wanted to know, because they're so pretty, these little drawings. Like, you could imagine having a series of them up in your kitchen. You know, she shows the glasses of water and what the plate looks like and what was in the bottle and what her latte looked like. Like, they're really, really cute.
And the vitamins that she takes.
Yes. So, yes, you can follow Dear Colleen on Instagram if you too have caught the intermittent fasting bug that I definitely have. How's your intermittent fasting going, Nikki?
It's going well. I've lost 3 pounds, so I'm just half of you. But I haven't given up, you know, anything bad.
Yes, but I also think we have to note here that I think I want to be really clear with people if they think, God, she's lost a lot of weight, is that I have done nothing to help myself for the last few years, basically. I haven't, you know, I've gone through fits where I've gone to the gym, or fits when I've decided I'm going to do some sort of diet, but I just haven't stuck to anything. I haven't done anything. Whereas something has just triggered in my head and just stuck with me on this one. Like, I know that I will still be doing this when we get to Christmas. Like, I feel that determined. Have you ever had that feeling, Nikki? I guess you've run a marathon, so yes.
Yeah, that was one time, and then I quickly retired. But yes, to do it, you do it. You get in a mindset. You're like, that's what I'm going to do, and you do it. And the thing they say about losing weight is that you've got to find what works for you. So different things work for different people. And if this is going to be the thing that works for you, because it can't feel like it's hard. Every second of every day can't feel like, God, this is so hard. It's got to feel like it just fits into your life.
And the other thing you have to do, Nikki, is measure yourself. Because my beautiful friend from Renmark, Danielle, hi Danielle, because she listens to the podcast, she is super fit. And I think she said in her update yesterday, she's lost, you know, 0.2 of a kilo or something, but she's lost 14 centimetres.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. So wow. you can't judge it on what the scales say, because I've lost 3 kilos, but I've lost an inch around my waist.
That's fabulous.
Yeah. I haven't really lost a lot off my thighs or my boobs, but that tends to be what happens with me. Like, I kind of go in at waist the waist. Foot. And then my face gets smaller and I really go top down from there. You know, it always happens the same way. But this is the fattest I've ever been in my entire life. Fatter than when I was fully pregnant.
Yeah, I did that too. I was like, oh, this is more than when I was 9 months pregnant. So I think I need to sort that out.
Yes. I'm actually, I think, 10 kilos heavier than I was fully pregnant. That's scary stuff, isn't it? So, yes, if anyone's listening and thinks, oh, that's a bit dangerous, I'm a bit worried about her, don't worry, I'm in no danger of starving. I've got plenty of reserves.
All right, but Dear Colleen definitely should check it out, the Instagram account. It's very, very cool.
Okay, is that us for the week, Nikki? Are we done?
I think that's us for the week. So we'd just like to say thank you for listening. If you got to this point and you're still listening, please, 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 if you can and you haven't, leave us a review on iTunes. And we would also love you to leave us a message on our webpage, which is www.twofatexpats.com. Go on there, click on the microphone and leave us a message about anything. But if you have a good comment about an international school, label or a random stereotype, bang it in.
Wonderful.
Okay, that's it.
See you later.
Bye.